Today, how can students learn the Bible as an elective in school? We'll talk with Elizabeth Ridenour, president of the National Council on Bible Curriculum in Public Schools.
So our founding fathers have never intended for the Bible to be removed from our public schools.
Then, the inspiring story of Jessica Tapia, a California teacher who was fired for refusing to compromise her Christian faith.
I knew very clearly he was calling me to take a bold stand and not resign and walk away, not put my head in the sand like sadly a lot of teachers are feeling like they need to do to keep their job. These directives you've given me, I can't comply with because they go against my faith and my beliefs.
It's the weekend of August 3rd and 4th. I'm Jeff Shambly, and this is The Stand Radio. Is there a new openness to use the Bible in public schools? One organization that's been active in getting students exposed to the Bible as a historical and literary document is the National Council on Bible Curriculum in Public Schools. Elizabeth Ridenour is the president and is joining us now. Ms. Ridenour, welcome to the program.
Hey, Jeff. Thank you so much.
Give us some history on the National Council on Bible Curriculum in Public Schools, if you would.
Well, let's see. In 1963, of course, the Bible was, as a devotional use, was thrown out of the public schools. And from that time on, as I got older, I was kind of wondering about it. I became a paralegal and found out that the phrase separation of church and state had been greatly misused. It was never in our Constitution, Bill of Rights, or founding documents, and most people probably know about that. In fact, the Supreme Court, in interpreting the First Amendment, approved the use of the Bible in the classroom for historical and literary purposes. So we began as a nonprofit just for the state of North Carolina, which is where I'm located, where we're located. And it took off so fast from there that we rechartered as a national nonprofit. And it is now, the Bible's now been implemented in over 4,200 public high schools in 42 states. Of course, it's taught as an elective, and that's kind of how it all began. We had no idea it would take off so quickly.
So if it's an elective, then students would sign up, say, in their junior or senior year for extra classes. Is that normally how this would work?
So actually, it's for both middle school and high school.
Okay.
And it is an elective, and it's not a off-campus program. It's on campus, on the high school campus, during school hours, for credit, as an elective, just like any other class.
Elizabeth, what had our founding fathers intended when it comes to the Bible and in terms of education for our young people?
Well, as far as the young people, the students have wondered what's been missing. Unless you have a working knowledge of the Bible, and particularly the books of the law, it's very difficult to understand even the basis on which our Constitution was founded. And is the predicament of how the public schools are these days, which we're not real happy about, but 88% of the students nationwide are educated still in the public school system. And we can't just abandon them. So our founding fathers have never intended for the Bible to be removed from our public schools. There was a secular study done by the American Political Science Review on the political documents of the founding era, which was 1760 to 1805. And 94% of all the documents that went into the founding era were based on the Bible. And of that, 34% of the contents were direct quotations from the Bible. And then you might hear some people say, I mean, we've been doing this now for 31 years. And sometimes you'll say, well, what about other things getting in there like Satanism or you know, other religions? We have never had that happen in one school, not once in all these years has another religion like that tried to come in as an elective. Now, all the other worldviews are already being taught in the schools. The secular humanists, the Marxist-Leninists, the New Age, all that material is already there. We're just giving the children a chance as an elective to read the biblical Christian worldviews, which is their legal right. So So that's kind of where we are. The oh my goodness, there's so many reasons for this, like for art. Yes. What meaning could Leonardo da Vinci's Last Supper and Michelangelo's Moses have to students if they don't know about the figures who inspired those works of art? How can you study Middle Eastern history, which would come in very handy now,
right,
without incorporating the Bible? You can't. So
really, the Bible is essential to being a well-educated person, period. I mean, the
well-rounded.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, what does the law say in terms of what is allowed and what is not allowed in terms of the Bible in public schools?
Well, you're not allowed to proselytize, of course, which we're very careful not to do. However, we have a 300-page curriculum guide for the teacher that comes with a 150-page teacher's companion guide that has all the lessons, plans, tests, activities in it every day for the teacher to make it real easy for the teacher and also for the teacher to follow all the legal guidelines without getting in any trouble. And we provide actually over the last 10 years, we used to charge the schools for the curriculum, but we now provide all the curriculum for the teachers and the materials and even the student versions for the schools at no charge.
Hmm. Is the Bible itself used as a text in the class in addition to the curriculum that you have?
Yes. Yes, I'm glad you asked. The Bible is the main textbook, yes. The kids read through the whole Bible in the course of a year.
Ah, wow. That's a lot of material.
It is. It is.
Give us a sample, a little bit of a taste of the kinds of things that a student would learn about the Bible if they're taking this class.
I can tell you this. Rabbi Daniel Lappin wrote us a wonderful endorsement, and in there he said, from cover to cover, that our curriculum overflows with rich, informative lessons from both the Tanakh, the Old Testament, as well, of course, from the New Testament. He says he's delighted that the curriculum begins with an entire semester focused solely on the Tanakh. Students examine famous figures like Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, and Moses, as well as Jewish Bible-based laws and customs that are part of the Jewish holidays, customs, and traditions still celebrated today. And he just thinks that this curriculum would richly prepare students, he says, for future U.S. government, history, and civic courses.
That is a wonderful endorsement. And I tell you, the exciting thing is that this curriculum has been time-tested, and it has stood the legal standards, and it is something that when people have in their school, they can know that it has been tried and tested. So that's a wonderful...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, the ACLU doesn't like it, of course. They're always going to say boo. But if you stand up to them, then they're most likely to leave you alone. They try to go to schools or school districts where they feel they can intimidate them or scare them. So that's the main thing, is for people to know their rights and stand up for them.
If people would like to know more about the Bible curriculum in public schools, how can they find out more?
Sure. Well, they can call us at 336-921-0070. We'll be glad to help them over the phone, or they can go to our website, which is Bible in Schools is plural, .net. So it's BIBLEINSCHOOLS.net. And there's a whole lot of information on there. They'll know a lot of them. They'll be familiar with a lot of the people on our board of directors and advisory board. Chuck Norris and his wife came under our board of directors, and it so happened in a way, because if you remember Walker, Texas Ranger,
yeah,
in one of their programs, at the end of the program, they showed a close-up of them laying a Bible down on a coffee table, because in the program there had been so many problems with students and children. And they said, this is what needs to be returned to the public schools. So when they said that, I contacted them, and they were very much in favor of joining with us.
Outstanding. That's a great endorsement. With Chuck Norris on your side, you can't go wrong, Miss Ridenour. Oh, wonderful.
Oh, man.
Well, Elizabeth Ridenour has been our guest. She's president of the National Council on Bible Curriculum in Public Schools. Once again, the website, BibleInSchools.net, BibleInSchools.net. Miss Ridenour, thank you for your work in this wonderful organization, and God bless you as you get the Bible in public schools all across this nation.
Oh, thank you, Jeff, for all that you and AFA do. Y'all are awesome, and we appreciate your help in getting the word out.
The men and women who teach our children are some of the most important role models in their lives. But what happens when a teacher is required by a school district to set aside any religious convictions and deliberately mislead parents if a student comes to them and wants to change genders? That happened to Jessica Tapia, a teacher in California who was recently fired for standing on truth and refusing to lie to students and parents. She won a court battle and now is dedicated to helping other teachers who face a similar situation. Ms. Tapia is with us today along with her attorney, Bethany Onishinko of Advocates of Faith and Freedom. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you so much.
Jessica, your story is fascinating. Tell us what happened to you.
Sure. It is quite the story. It really took place over the course of 7 months. I'll try to give a brief version of it, though. But really, it all started when students decided to look me up on social media. And, you know, that is my personal page, totally aside from anything work-related. And it's just a place where I felt the Lord call me to start speaking some bold truths mm-hmm. and looking into the culture through a biblical lens. And I began doing that, and students found my page and took issue to my Christian conservative beliefs that I'm very outspoken about on my Instagram page. They sent in several of my posts, several posts from my Jesus highlight, and then a video specifically I had made in Kohl's sharing about how people are now making pride clothing for toddlers and babies and how I think that is so wrong. And so that landed me on paid administrative leave, and they began investigating. All of a sudden, allegations came about how I do my job. And I really just entered into the most intense spiritual warfare I've ever been through. And through it all, basically faced this ultimatum of, we are going to barely allow you to go ahead and come back to work and continue teaching, but now we're placing these directives on you. And so that is when I was totally convicted and faced with one of the biggest decisions of my lifetime. And the directives, though, that I specifically was convicted over were, number one, I was being told I would now have to refer to students by their preferred pronouns or, you know, chosen gender. I would have to withhold that from parents, which I, of course, clarified with my school district. Are you potentially asking me to lie to parents? And they said yes for student safety and privacy. And then thirdly, they said I would have to allow transgender students in my locker room. So again, I clarify, does this mean potentially a boy in my female locker room? And they said, yes, it's the law here in California. So I ended up going on stress leave after being faced with these directives because I didn't know what to do right away. And through those 3 months of stress leave, the Lord really, you know, worked on my heart in so many different ways. And at the end of that, I knew very clearly He was calling me to take a bold stand and not resign and walk away, not put my head in the sand, like sadly a lot of teachers are feeling like they need to do to keep their job, but to just speak up and say, these directives you've given me, I can't comply with because they go against my faith and my beliefs. So that's what I did. From there, I was put through a religious accommodation meeting by my school district mm-hmm. to see if and how they could accommodate me. And after that, they came to the conclusion that they could not, and this was in writing in my termination letter, could not accommodate my religious beliefs and was therefore being terminated from employment. And just to add in there, I was a tenured teacher. I had been with that school district for 8+ years, mm-hmm. including my substitute teaching.
So after that point, you decided that you would pursue them legally because, I mean, this is an obvious viewpoint discrimination issue. You decided to take them to court, essentially. What happened?
Absolutely. I didn't second guess that for a second. I actually knew beforehand if they fire me, I'm seeking justice. I believe we're called to do that. We don't know what the outcome of it will ever look like, but I believe we're called to seek justice. And it really especially hit home too, because I saw that this was specifically an attack on the truth and an attack on Christianity. And so I felt it was my duty to continue taking the stand. And so I did. I sued my school district. I found the amazing legal ministry that Advocates for Faith and Freedom is. My pastor, Pastor Jack Hibbs, and Charlie Kirk both recommended me to them. And they have just been the greatest blessing in my life over the past year that I've gone through this lawsuit. But yes, we sued the school district. It took the course of almost 1 year to a T until we came to a settlement agreement this past May, of $360,000. And at that point, I had been fired from the school district for a little over a year and truly felt that that was justice because I was paid out three times what they owed me. And for me, it wasn't ever about the money. It was about my prayer the whole time was, Lord, please do with this lawsuit whatever needs to be done to send a message to the teachers across the nation who are feeling the weight of this evil and darkness that has infiltrated education, and show them that it is always worth it to stand for what's right. And you can't go wrong when you stand for what's right. And so that was my prayer. I truly feel that through this settlement, that is the message that has been sent. I get messages from teachers every day, and it's been such a blessing to see how God can use you when you are obedient to Him and you really put Him first and trust Him.
Wow, what a story. Bethany, I'm going to bring you in. Now, you and the team at Advocates for Faith and Freedom successfully represented Jessica through this settlement. What were the legal arguments that you were making on her behalf?
Yeah, so we actually made several legal arguments for Jessica. First would be that the school district violated Title VII. Title VII requires employers to accommodate the religious beliefs of its employees. In this case, Jessica requested a religious accommodation, and the school just outright said, "We cannot accommodate your religious beliefs." But legally, they are under the obligation to do so and to find her an accommodation. And in her case, that could have been as simple as allowing her to call students by their last name instead of their preferred pronouns, or other similar things like that. So Title VII was our first claim. And then we also brought claims, obviously, under the Free Exercise Clause, stating that Jessica has a right to exercise her religious beliefs and that she doesn't shed those at the schoolhouse gate. And then we also brought claims under the Free Speech Clause that Jessica has a right to speak on these issues. And then we also brought a claim for retaliation under the First Amendment, just alleging that the school district retaliated against her for speaking up, for her beliefs.
Bethany, the thing that strikes me first of all is that it reminds me of something that would happen in communist China when the students are going to the teacher's personal social media site and reporting them for what they don't like. I mean, is this common? Is this going on today in schools?
So this actually is going on. We're hearing of this more and more frequently, but especially with private social media pages, teachers are under no obligation to withhold their beliefs. Teachers obviously have a right to free speech. They have a right to free exercise of religion, and that's particularly true when they're acting in their individual capacity on their own social media. And so, teachers absolutely have a right to speak on these issues, and unfortunately, students are taking issue with that. But as we've seen in Jessica's case, when you stand up to this kind of tyranny, teachers are winning and they're finding success because it's just a fundamental principle that teachers do have these rights to speak on these issues.
Well, that is encouraging. Jessica, what is it that teachers need to know if they're faced with a situation where they're asked to do something that goes against their religious convictions?
You know what? My lawyers always say it best, and it's that our rights, our religious liberties, our freedom of speech are not second class to these policies that they are pushing out, and they're just coming up with, it feels like, out of thin blue air. And here in California, gutting and amending bills now to make it law for schools to withhold this sort of information from parents. It's so important that teachers don't just get scared at the word, because they will try to gaslight you with the word law, policy, directive, and And, you know, you're potentially putting your job on the line if you go against any of this. Teachers need to know they have rights too. They don't have to bow down to everything that their, you know, employer, school district throws at them. And I encourage them not to. We truly are in a time where words matter more than ever before, and truth is under attack. And it seems most especially those who of the Christian faith who are trying to live out their Christian faith are really becoming targets. And we need to take a stand. And like I said, trust that when we do that, God is going to take care of us and provide. And I can certainly testify you will be blown away on the other side of putting your faith into action, because he can do so much more with our obedience than when we, you know, try to have a control grip on our life and honor men above him.
Well, well said. Bethany, the organization Advocates for Faith and Freedom has just launched an initiative called Teachers Don't Lie. Now, tell us what your goals are with that initiative and what you're doing to help teachers like Jessica.
Right. So Jessica's story actually inspired us and is helping, and Jessica herself is helping us launch this Teachers Don't Lie campaign. And more information is available at teachersdontlie.com. But this whole initiative was created to help teachers like Jessica, who are facing similar directives or similar agendas in their school system. And so this campaign is just really, first and foremost, an educational campaign, ready and willing to inform teachers about their constitutional rights and just empower teachers that they don't have to shed these rights when they enter the schoolhouse. They absolutely have a right to speak. They absolutely have a right to stand. So that's first and foremost, we provide education to these teachers, but also should teachers find themselves in scenarios like Jessica, where they do take a stand and they are facing, you know, expulsion or termination from their position, we are ready and willing to assist these teachers with legal help to litigate on their behalf so that we can start to see these just agendas and directives pushed out of our schools. It's kind of like Jessica said, we are not able to take a stand against these initiatives and these directives unless we have teachers who are willing to take a stand. So, you know, teachers who retire or feel like they have to quit because of these directives, we actually aren't able to legally challenge these school districts unless we have teachers who don't cower and don't bow down and who do stand up. And so the Teachers Don't Lie campaign is just a way to legally support the teachers who are willing to take that stand.
Yeah, let me give the website for our listeners. The website is teachersdontlie.com. Easy to remember, teachersdontlie.com, to find out information about what we're talking about today, and also give you the website for the organization that Bethany Onishinko is leading. She's with Advocates for Faith and Freedom. That website is faith-freedom.com. Jessica, let me go back to you and ask you, because we have people listening from all walks of life, and certainly teachers, this is applicable to them. But for the average believer who's in the workplace and is faced with some sort of persecution on some level, what has this taught you in your situation about standing up for biblical truth? How has this affected you personally? What would you say to those listening?
Oh, so much. I could write a book, and I honestly need to. First and foremost, anything that we face, you know, persecution-wise, Jesus faced it first. And so we have him, you know, to be our strength. As a matter of fact, it's when we're at that point of weakness, that is when he can come in and be our strength if we call on him, if we allow him to do that. And again, and kind of let go of that control, which is really hard. I get that completely. My teaching salary here in California paid for our mortgage. Mm. And I was certain that we were going to lose our house. But I had to, you know, even surrender that fear and even just surrender, you know, this whole idea in my head of I've worked so hard for this degree and for this salary, you know, to just put it on the line in that way. But it really made me ask myself some hard but necessary questions, which is some of which were, you know, are these truly your beliefs? Is this who you really believe in? And if you believe he is that good of a God, wouldn't you take this stand? Wouldn't you, you know, step out in faith in this way? And so it was like, yes, most definitely. And so I just simply had an opportunity to really live out my faith. And looking back, I shudder at the thought of having not done that, because I'm so grateful for the life God has, for what God's done with my life since doing that. But yeah, my encouragement to anyone, it's not just teachers, it's any Christian in the workplace, is ultimately the Lord is your provider, and you know, He is Lord over everything, all things, and you don't know if what you're going through could be because He is trying to take you somewhere different, somewhere better, somewhere where He needs you more. And so just that full surrender and that faith in action is really what He has taught me through this, and has just inspired me to keep living boldly for Him.
Bethany, as an attorney, are you hopeful that cases like Jessica's will convince school districts that they need to back off when it comes to forcing teachers to leave their religious beliefs aside?
Oh, absolutely. I think the reason school districts and just employers universally are feeling confident enough to push these kind of directives and agendas and policies is because we have seen a sort of cowardice where people aren't willing to stand up and say, hey, that's not okay. But as we've started to see people like Jessica and others that come to our organization often, as we've started to see them stand up and say, hey, my values and my Christian beliefs have a place here, have a place in the workplace, have a place in the school system, then we've started to see response from these districts and from these employers where they're realizing, oh, we can't get away with this. And in fact, we're going to have to pay out significant money
right.
if we keep doing this. And so I think Jessica's case sent that message very strongly. And it does send a message to districts and employers that you will not get away with this and these kind of agendas pushed on your employees.
Well, Jessica, what an amazing story. We are so sorry this happened to you, but we are grateful for your stance. And I know that the body of Christ is greatly encouraged and strengthened by testimonies like this. So thank you for standing up. Thank you for being willing to speak out and to help other people as well. And Bethany, for your work at Advocates for Faith and Freedom, thanks for your fight. And again, if people want to know more about that, it's faith-freedom.com. And be sure and check out the website teachersdontlie.com. Jessica Tapia and Bethany Onishinko, thank you for your time and keep up the good work.
Thank you so much.
Next week, we'll meet the director of the Center for Judicial Renewal, Philip Juregi, and find out how solid constitutional judges are already being vetted for future appointments and how you can get that information into the hands of your members of Congress. We'll also talk about how to be more effective stewards of our lives. We'll visit with Reagan Rose, Bible teacher and author of the book, Well Done, A Strategy for Life Stewardship. Today's program, along with our guest information, is available on our podcast page at afr.net. And be sure to get your free 6-month trial subscription to The Stand magazine or sign up for the daily email at afa.net/The Stand. Thanks so much for listening today, and join us next time on The Stand Radio.